Hour two of the Dr. Future Show straight ahead.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. This year we have a very special treat for you. We're bringing you live and in person, John Draper, a.k.a. Captain Crunch, the grandfather of computer hacking as we know it today. Actually, John goes way back before the computer networks. He goes back to the phone systems, and actually the phone systems were, in a sense, the first global network before computers, and John was there exploring them, and the Magellan of the Seas of that time.
They were after telegraphs, though.
Yeah, after telegraphs, but the networks, the phone networks were the very early thing, and John explored those first and moved on from there. He's been through some amazing adventures over his life, and he's taken the time to finally write a book about his life, which I've had the privilege of seeing. It's amazing, some of the stories. Going back to the 50s, to the nuclear bombs blowing up in the desert.
I think it's really hard for people now in the digital native era to even understand what life was like before we had all this connectivity, and to read stories that bridge that gap from nothing to everything is really, it's a time capsule.
Yeah, and John's one of those that have spanned the generations to see this all evolve. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm here.
Yay. All right.
I wanted to make sure everybody knows and gets access to our website. It's www.beyondthelittlebluebox.com, all one big word. And if you want to get a copy of the book, this is very, very important to ensure you'll be one of the first lucky people to get a copy of the book. Make sure that you sign up for the mailing list. This is very important because you're going to be notified as soon as the Kickstarter campaign opens up, because there's going to be limited copies, so you got to get in there and get it while you can. There is also special rewards.
Are you signing them too, John? Are you,
Yeah, that's part of the rewards as well. Yeah. Signed copies of the book. And we're going to be doing a Blue Anana box. This is a very small little
man, this
device.
This is a perk in the fundraiser for
the Kickstarter. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is an Anana box?
Anana box, what that is, it's a Tor router. All you do is you just connect it to your computer. You can connect it either through Wi-Fi or through your Cat5 connector cable.
Yeah.
And connect it to go to a cafe. And your IP address is hidden from everybody else.
You get access
to
anonymous?
Hidden service. Absolutely. There's no way they can trace you or anything.
So if you want to go explore the dark web or whatever,
you can
free.
Do that. Yes, of course.
So and is along, that the equivalent of like a VPN?
It actually has a built-in VPN as well. So it's very important that you know that. But the nice thing about it is it also has a Captain Crunch whistle that serves as a thumb drive. So you can store all your PGP keys on it and put it on your key ring.
Uh-huh. So you can watch American movies in other countries with impunity.
And speaking of VPNs,
yes.
If you take a look at my wall on my Facebook page, facebook.com/JD Crunchman.
Yes.
There has been a Russian programmer that's been busted for setting up a VPN because Putin is planning on making VPNs illegal to use in Russia.
Oh, he's harking back to his KGB background here.
So there's an article about that, and it's about this Russian guy who got busted for setting up what is called an exit node. Huh. Anybody can participate in the Tor community by operating an exit node. This guy, Dmitry Bogatov, Bogatov in Russia, has been arrested and charged with, quote, preparing to organize mass disorder, unquote.
I see. So, well, isn't that kind of ridiculous, though? I mean, isn't VPN pretty common technology?
Yeah, it is. It's very common. And this is why it's appalling to know that they're going to make VPNs illegal, because everybody uses a VPN. How do you connect to your company when you're working remotely? You do it through a VPN. And this is very important.
Could you maybe define
virtual private network?
Yeah, a VPN stands for virtual private network. And what it is, it's a way of connecting to another computer that's not your computer, that's somewhere else. And when you go up and look at your IP address is not your IP address from your provider. If you have an internet provider like Comcast, I call it Comcrap, and other providers, what those providers do is they do what is called deep packet inspection. So if you go to places like the Pirates Bay, they know that you're going to Pirates Bay. But if you go through a VPN, they don't know you're going through Pirates Bay. But you got to be careful in choosing the right VPN. I would choose IBVPN is a good one. They're out of Eastern Europe. I recommend you go with Golden Frog or Viper.
Gotcha. Well, you have the right ones on your thumb drive?
Yeah, you can have all of those on your thumb drive.
Yeah, on your thumb drive. Listen, we got to go to a break. John, you hold on a sec. We'll be right back.
Sure.
This is the Dr. Future Show, KSCO, Santa Cruz.
That's right. And teaching you about VPNs and all kinds of things about how to guard your online privacy and safety.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking to John Draper, a.k.a. Captain Crunch, who just wrote his autobiography, Beyond the Little Blue Box. Welcome back to the show, John.
Hi. It's basically a narrative biography. It's been co-written by Craig Wilson. He's the co-author. He currently lives and resides in Spain.
Oh.
I live in Las Vegas. So we're both collaborating together on the book.
Nice.
Now, this website that we have, beyondthelittleblueblox.com, is a special VIP section. And inside that VIP section, remember I said you need to sign up for that. So you sign up for that. You want to be getting into the VIP section, because that's going to give you access to a lot more, you might say, goodies.
Yes. It's good software for surfing the web effortlessly.
Yeah, and a lot of good Captain Crunch memorabilia kind of thing, too.
Now, you said that the thumb drive that would have the VPN info and all that would also have a Captain Crunch whistle. No, that doesn't work anymore, right? That was a...
It does blow 2600.
Oh, it'll blow 2600.
Actually, there's no equipment that it responds to,
right, no more 70s phone technology to respond to. Right.
No, but it does have a thumb drive, and you can put anything you want on there. I was hoping to have the time to basically put together some good encryption software on it and stuff like that. But with copyright concerns, anybody can just go up and get that stuff anyway.
Yeah.
Most people are using applications like Signal and WhatsApp and stuff.
Yeah, but still, I think knowing that you thoughtfully put together a collection of stuff that's somewhat trivial for you to think of, but maybe is a big deal for someone who hasn't taken the time to explore this arena.
And most of my time, of course, now is being recovering from a nasty surgery I had in March. Some fans and colleagues have set up a GoFundMe site, GoFundMe.com/crunch-medical-fund. And I'm hoping with the money raised on that I can complete my goal of reaching a certain amount. And if I can reach that certain amount, I hope to have that GoFundMe site closed down, hopefully very soon, and then I get back to focusing on my book.
Yeah, you're also writing an article on your experiences with the American medical system.
That's right. Thank you for reminding me. I was actually going to think about that. Yes.
Which is an interesting thing, because I'm sure you've been thinking about it from a hacking point of view as well, of how the system could be better.
I'm having to get the assistance of other professional writers, because I can't write my way out of a wet paper bag. That's why there are people like Craig Wilson around to help me with a book.
Yeah, I thank God for teamwork.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Boy, so you're 75 now, is that right?
73.
Okay, so so you actually have lived through several generations.
I have lived through the entire beginning, even before the beginning of the computer revolution. I've been around when there weren't no computers.
So that's where
there
was
no
begins,
Facebook. Yeah. There were no cell phones.
Right. It goes back to where there was long-distance phone calls.
All there was these little princess phones, dial phones. They would connect you up to the local exchange, and you pay 25 cents a minute during nighttime and 75 cents a minute during daytime to make a long-distance call.
My God.
And you know, back then, during that time, I predicted that the phone companies were going to be offering flat-rate long-distance calling throughout the entire country. In other words, you can call the entire country flat rate. And now you take a look at some of these providers of at least landline phones, even, well, of course, cell phones too, will provide you with so many minutes, but it's covering the entire country.
Yeah, yeah, we
so
went global.
So every call is like a local call.
So
now,
when were you thinking about that? Flat rate in the mid-70s? At the timing when you were involved?
Yeah,
with,
back then it was unheard of. Who would ever think that the greedy Ma Bell would let you go for that? I can remember also when U.S. Sprint came on the service where you had to call a special number to get into Sprint and then connect to through a code and get into Sprint.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, often when you want to make a call from a payphone, you ask your operator to connect you to the Sprint operator. They won't do it because it's a competing service and they won't connect you to that number.
Mm-hmm.
I've had that problem before.
Incompatibilities between systems. But back in the Ma Bell
days...
It's
not incompatibility per system. It's just incompatibility in the mindset of the phone company.
Right, in terms of making money. Now, when you said greedy, now you're talking even back in the 70s, there was a tremendous amount of money Ma Bell was making on the phone system?
Oh, they were gorging everybody back then. I mean,
really?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the rates were just horrible. And even now, today, you take your mobile phone and you go to Europe... and you connect to Skype and you make a Skype call, that Skype call is going to cost you about $300. Why? Because when you take your mobile phone and you go to another area, another country, mm-hmm. you're data roaming, and that's where they can really soak you to the cleaners.
So watch out for data roaming.
What I would
do... Yeah, actually, my niece just went to Europe, and she's got a $10 a day plan for... data roaming.
That's a good idea.
Get a
plan if you can, or better yet, what I would do is just get a SIM chip for the country that I'm visiting with a good data plan.
Well, where do you find those in countries? Where do they usually sell
those?
Well,
that's a problem because let's say in Germany,
you're
not going to be able to get on the LTE network unless you have a contract with one of the four different German providers.
You have to be a local resident for those, usually,
You have to have a contract with them. Then they'll let you access the higher speed data, like 4G and LTE. But if you just get a SIM card, and you're going to pay about usually 30 euros, and that will usually give you about 2 gigabytes of data per month, which is good, but you're not connected to the higher speed network. You're connected to the G network.
Mm.
Which is a little bit, it's kind of between the 3G and the 4G as far as speed goes. It's a little bit faster than 3G, but a little bit slower than 4G. And when you go between cities in Germany, you're only going to get 2G and Edge.
Oh, and so that doesn't really allow you to have
it's
a Skype call
really
then,
good.
Even.
No, not even. So this is the thing you have to watch out for. Of course, in Germany, you can ride the Deutsche Bahn. They have internet Wi-Fi on most of the trains anyway. It's not very good, by the way. It's pretty slow.
Hmm.
But they have internet mostly on the trains.
Well, that's good. At least they have it.
Yeah.
Now, in this country, you can get a number of encrypted voice communications now, right? Like Signal.
Yeah, I highly recommend Signal. Everybody's recommending Signal. If you have a browser that supports WebRTC, you can also use the Jitsi bridge. It's basically https://meet for meet. Mm-hmm. .jit, that's Juliet India Tango, .si, S-I stands for Sam in India.
Okay, we'll put a link to this on our
make
page.
A link to that.
Yeah.
Because if you support WebRTC on your browser...
And most of them do, don't they?
Chrome does, but don't even think about trying it with your Macintosh's Safari because they don't support it. It's political reasons between Apple and Google,
what
I guess.
What about Chrome on iPad?
No, I've never gotten it to work on my iPad.
Okay.
Those are the ones that I would highly recommend is Signal. Now, Signal just upgraded their system now. They're now supporting voice, and they're supporting voice with much better codecs now than they were before, so the quality is really good.
And what kind of encryption are they using, end-to-end?
They're using the best possible for what speed you're getting. Definitely end-to-end. It's also, it doesn't leave any metadata around.
So do they store the metadata at the...
As far as I know, I could be wrong, but when you sign up for a Signal account, you give them your phone number, and then they take that phone number along with other information on you, and they hash that into a public key. They store that public key on their servers. There's no relationship with anybody that's on the Signal system.
So that gives them...
That public key and the secret key, of course, is stored on my iPhone.
So you're the only one that has both.
Right, exactly. So when you send me, or you're talking to me on Signal, then when you call me, I get your call coming in. It's your public key. I connect to the server using your public key and my public key, and they knows that we're two talking to each other. Signal knows, my iPhone knows what your iPhone's IP address is. Your iPhone knows what my IP address is.
And we make off you go on a good connection there.
With nothing in the middle.
Nothing in the middle?
And there's nothing that relates. There's nothing that actually gives anybody else. The only thing that's stored under the cloud is just your key.
And that's different from some of the other surfaces. Like if you
WhatsApp and stuff like that. I mean, they're recording all that stuff.
So they've already been breached as far as you're concerned.
Yeah.
In terms of any real security. So Signal is the app, and that works on Androids and iPhones.
Androids, iOS. It also works on laptops too and on desktops as well.
Is that related to any famous hackers like Phil Zimmerman or?
Actually, now that you mention it, Signal is using the what they call the Open Whisper Systems, and that's a system that was developed with Phil Zimmerman from PGP fame back in the early 90s.
Yeah, that was the first serious encryption for personal computers back in the
90s. Right, exactly. It was pretty cumbersome to use.
Yeah.
You had to store your plain text on a file and store it on a machine somewhere.
Yeah, it was a big deal. Listen, John, can you stay on and answer some questions?
I'll be around.
Hold on. We got to go to CBS News break, and we'll be right back. John Draper, a.k.a. Captain Crunch, author of Beyond the Little Blue Box. Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking to John Draper, a.k.a. Captain Crunch, phone freaker, legendary internet pioneer, privacy advocate, and author of Beyond the Little Blue Box.
And you sound like Darth Vader on the mic there, John.
And you have a co-author with your the box.
He's actually listening to me right now. I've been actually chatting with him in Spain on Skype while I've been talking to you.
Oh, fantastic. So he's hearing us now. Fantastic.
Oh, yeah, him and also Ali. She's in London, and she's helping us with the Kickstarter page. I want to mention also...
Well, greetings, Craig.
We've got two other Facebook pages that we would like to mention.
Okay.
I've got a fan page. It's facebook.com/JohnCaptainCrunchDraper, all one big word. That's my fan page. And we also have another one, facebook.com/BeyondTheLittleBlueBox. When you go to that page, you can engage in discussions about the book, and I can respond to any of your questions there as well.
Okay, I do have a couple questions that have come in by text.
Go ahead. Let's answer some questions.
Okay, let's see. One question wants to know about what's the relationship of Putin with the Russian hacker community? Do you know anything about that?
Well, I actually watched the first Putin Stone interview.
Yeah.
Just less than an hour ago.
This is one that occurred when Stone was over there interviewing
Oliver Stone's been talking to him.
There are four interviews. It's on HBO or Showtime or one of those movie channels.
Showtime, I think.
Showtime. Mm-hmm. Putin is kind of washing his hands of the whole deal. He probably knows what's going on. He probably has got a lot of those programmers that he doesn't really have any direct connection with. Because when he mentioned in one of his talks, he says, well, I don't really know that there might be some patriotic Russians out there trying to disrupt the...
American elections?
The elections, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So people who didn't want Hillary elected, and so they're trying to throw it towards Trump?
I imagine there's something going on, because during the election, I was asked to become a delegate for Clark County here in Nevada.
Yeah.
And I signed up as a delegate, but when I went down to go through the process of registering for the state convention, I was told that I wasn't on their list. But yet when I go up on there and I show them on my iPhone, yeah, I am on the list. Here it is. There's John Draper. I'm the delegate. This is my precinct number, yada, yada, yada. It says, no, you're not on our list. So what happened to me? Why did I get taken off the list? Well, that's a very good question.
Sounds like maybe Hillary shenanigans.
Well, who knows? Could be the Russians still buying the database. You know, you never can tell.
Well, that's true. Now, that brings in another hypothetical question. This is another question from the audience. If you had God privileges to all computer networks, what would you access to find out exactly what happened with the Russians and the president? What would you actually access?
NSA.com.
I see. Because they would know. So someone there would know that, right?
I mean, it wouldn't be NSA.com, of course. But
yeah, but that.
There obviously are very super secret networks that have got a lot of information on it. In fact, as you well know, the CIA lost control of some of their golden jewels,
right,
as it were.
Which makes me wonder, well, why, what about some of the big questions, like whether or not aliens exist, or crash saucers in Roswell, things like that? Shouldn't we be able to find out the real story?
Well, there has been reports of some hackers getting into the NASA website and grabbing some UFO documents.
Really?
Yeah. That was a long time ago. That was like in the mid-90s.
So nothing really substantial
came out of that. Because they were able to suppress that pretty readily.
Yeah. And is it possible that suppression can occur on the level to block something as core as...
Well, they're doing it. They're doing it. We already know they exist, right? They're doing it.
Well, what convinced you?
What convinced me?
Yeah.
When I was stationed up at in Alaska, I was picking them up on radar, and I know where our airplanes can't fly the way they do.
So you were a radar operator for...
Well, I was a technician. I was actually working on the radar, and very often that I calibrate the radar on Mount McKinley.
And so you saw flying craft on the radar that just, they weren't some kind of meteorological anomaly.
None of our airplanes can do.
Really? And then you think there was intelligence behind them from what you saw?
I would imagine. Come on. Look at how big the universe is. We can't be the only ones out here.
Yeah. So I have a question for you here, John. Seems to me Alan was telling me that one of the articles in his Slate today was about a prediction that in the future, propaganda is going to be so ruled by AIs that there will just not be any possibility for the average person to have access to what's really true. Unlike what you're saying now, which is just because we have access to the internet, we can know things that are true even though they're being denied officially. So how do we resolve the future where we have so much more access to information, but we have robots feeding us disinformation,
fake
competing
news
with people feeding us real and fake information? It's like, what is the average human supposed to do?
You have a solution for fake news?
Well, not really, other than just be skeptical and be aware of what's going on. Ask questions and stuff like that.
Sure.
So,
same as it ever was.
Yeah, I mean, same as it ever was. They have this TV program called Million Years in the Future, Year Million or something. I watched a couple of episodes of that, and it was like, what happens to the human? And they were all talking about the human's going to escape their bodies and go completely virtual and be in the computer.
Right.
And do that. I don't know if you had a chance to watch it, but it was pretty...
I wouldn't call that an escape.
Yeah, you say...
No, I would definitely not call it an escape.
Well, that's a Lawnmower Man.
Very far-fetched, you know?
Yeah.
Very far-fetched. Yeah, Lawnmower Man kind of stuff.
So you don't think we'll reach a point where we can just put our minds into a cybernetic field?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. Not anytime soon, right? Meanwhile, you're dealing with real flesh and blood issues.
Yeah, really. Well, that's my whole idea right now. Like, I'm trying to heal myself, and the surgery that I had just completely knocked me out. I mean, I can't do anything hardly anymore. So I'm having to limit my access to the computer by not sitting up too long because of the pain. Slowly but surely, my healing is coming better, but now it turns my insurance company is strong-arming me and telling me that they're no longer going to be paying for my physical therapy, so now I'm having to cover it at $90 a pop.
And figuring it out on your own about what works and what doesn't.
Hopefully using some of that money for the GoFundMe to help me recover.
Yeah.
I want to try to get to the point where I can go out and start signing books and be able to fly again and get around.
Yeah.
It's coming. It's just very slow and coming right now.
Yeah.
And the weather's warming up, so I'm able to do some swimming, and that's helping.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I was reading your accounts on that, and you're talking about how you were able to experiment with some hydrotherapy yourself and find that really worked for some.
Yeah, YouTube's a great source for that. I go up on YouTube, and I catch all the hydrotherapy exercises I ever can need and use. I just have to go over it with my real therapist to make sure that the stuff I'm doing is going to be safe for me to do. So I'll just show him a YouTube video and say, hey, is that safe for me to do? And he says, yeah, you should do that. I says, okay, it's on my list.
So there's another good use for the net is YouTube videos on whatever's
iPhone,
wrong with you.
I take my iPhone down by the pool and sit in the shade and go through some of the YouTube hydrotherapy videos, and then I go into the pool and I try them myself.
Do you search for particular issues?
No, I just write down hydrotherapy for spinal fusion surgery recovery, and it comes up with a lot of listings.
Interesting. Wow. That's something that the hospitals don't give you, but you can.
Oh, definitely not. I mean, they give you so little information. What they don't tell you is when you go into surgery, it causes a lot of complications. One of the biggest and most dangerous complications is blood clots and pneumonia. And so I'm having to take a lot of these blood clot medications, which is very expensive, by the way, and it's not covered by the insurance company. See, the insurance company, they don't, you're going to read this in my article when I post it on Steemit, how the insurance company, well, yeah, they'll be willing to pay for your surgery, but they're going to do very little for your post-surgery recovery process. Because when you do surgery, you also have got to deal with possible pneumonia, blood clots. And also, I'm having to purchase this thing called a OrthoFix, O-R-T-H-O-F-I-X. Google it. It's this magnetic coil I wear around me, and it generates this magnetic energy. And the magnetic energy helps my bone heal where my bone makes contact with the metal structures that's holding me together.
Wow.
And
awesome.
That tends to deteriorate and go bad. And when I use this magnetic thing, the studies have shown that this gives me an 80% better recovery, because almost all the time when you especially have a spinal surgery, more than likely you're going to have another one within 2 to 3 years, because the part above or below where you had that surgery is going to fail, and then you're going to have to go back and get that done.
Wow. Well, that's it. So that was OrthoFix. That's interesting. The electromagnetics and healing. It's about time this we see more devices.
Well, they call it bone stimulation.
Yeah. Bone stimulation. That's fascinating. Well, listen, we're going to get into another break, but if you have any more questions for John Draper, a.k.a. Captain Crunch, we'll be here. Give us a call, 831-479-1080, if you want to talk to the captain yourself.
Dr. Future Show. We'll be right back.
Top ways to help out the San Lorenzo watershed.
Take chemicals to the waste disposal center. Don't flush medications down the toilet.
Be careful of walking on unstable ground next to the river to prevent erosion. Pick up after your pet and throw the waste in the trash.
Don't wash your car in a driveway. Instead, go to a car wash. Don't litter. Pick up your trash.
Get your car repaired to prevent oil leaks. Plant native trees to prevent erosion.
Remember to recycle. Brought to you by the San Lorenzo Valley Middle School Watershed Rangers, San Lorenzo Valley Water District, and the Coastal Watershed Council.
It's our San Lorenzo Watershed. Protect it.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking to John Draper, a.k.a. Captain Crunch, about his life and times and politics and beyond, which is the name of his book, Beyond the Little Blue Box. Now, we have a couple questions come in. One is it true you saw a nuclear bomb exploding? Tell us about that.
That was in the summer of 1962. I was with my dad's friend, We were vacationing at Lake Mead, and then we were going boating and fishing, and then we had this old GMC truck kind of made into a camper. Uh-huh. It was pulling the boat we had. And we were going about 50 miles down the road. We just came out of Las Vegas. We were going up 95. And we heard on the radio that they were going to be doing a nuclear test in the Nevada desert.
Yeah, that's one of the last years they were doing them, I believe.
That's right. Yeah, and this was the Davy Crockett test. I found that out by going to the Atomic Testing Museum in Las Vegas and to find the exact blast that it was.
We love that place. That place is an amazing resource.
What a museum. Yeah, his son's from Las Vegas.
Yeah. So, I mean, the flash of light was, like, beyond anything that I could ever imagine.
Really? How did you get that close? I mean, how close
were
you?
Well, we were driving along the road, and they closed off the road, but we had already gone past the checkpoint. But we were going slower than the average flow of traffic, because remember, there was no speed limit in Nevada at the time, so people would usually hustle through it about, like, 90 miles an hour.
But yeah, because it's out in the middle of the desert.
And we were pulling a boat, so we couldn't go that fast.
Yeah. Kind of slipped between the
so you're going about 40 or 50 while everybody else is going 90.
So we were listening to the radio, and the radio was got a lot of static on it because the station was kind of weak. And then I saw the bright flash, well, we all did. And I was on the right-hand side of the car in the back seat, arm hanging out the window.
Yeah.
It was kind of hot. And then that flash came on, and the flash was just brighter than ever.
Wow.
I don't know how close I was. I had no idea.
What time of day was it?
Angel Peak was about 100 miles north of Nellis Air Force Base. That's where the outdoor tests were back then.
It was just that sunrise. It was
just a sunrise.
At or before sunrise.
Also, it was really bright then.
Oh, yeah.
Is it true you can see kind of X-ray effects? When?
Oh, yeah, the light. You could just see the bones in your hands.
It was really?
It was crazy bright.
You could see the bones in your hands?
It was that crazy bright. And then the flash, I could see, like, the wires, the fence wires, smoke was coming off of them. I didn't understand what that phenomenon was, but it looked really strange. And it wasn't until, like, just 5 or 6 years ago I saw an article on atomic explosions, and they were talking about EMP, electromagnetic pulse, and that must have been what I saw, and that must have been why our car wouldn't start. The radio completely got zapped.
Really did stop driving? I mean, you had to pull over?
The entire ignition system was totally fried. We couldn't go anywhere.
Oh.
So we had to wait there for road service, and we eventually got it towed to a service place in somewhere near Reno. And we found out that pretty much the ignition was gone, the radio was gone. There wasn't anything left working electronically. But remember that this was a 6-volt system. The radio was tubes. 6 transistor radios were just then coming on the market scene. They came on the scene at around 1960, 1961. That's when they were really getting popular. Even those transistor radios were pretty robust. But this goes before ICs happened.
You think they would have
survived? And I had a nasty burn in my arm afterwards.
Yes, I was going to ask you, any health issues from that?
Other than the burn, not that I know of, except my eyes were I kind of lost a lot of my night vision after that.
Wow. How old were you?
I must have been about 18, 19. I was in my senior year of high school, I think.
Wow.
I was on vacation, yeah. Of course, I had to have a cover-up for my parents. I told my parents that I fell asleep in the sun and got sun.
You couldn't tell them you got accidentally nuclear radiated?
Yeah, I mentioned that to my parents.
Yeah.
I kept that a pretty close secret for like 20 years. Man, I haven't talked to anybody about
it. What were you doing down at the lake?
Yeah. And the person...
Well, I was just on my way from one city to the next and...
You had somebody to share that story with, right? You're traveling with you.
There's more gory details of it in the book, for sure.
That's right. This is one of the book stories that definitely recommend you checking out. Now, another question came in. Did you know Steve Wozniak before Steve Jobs?
I met them at the same time.
Yeah.
I got a call from my friend Groucho and UC Berkeley. He says, you got to meet this guy. His name is Steve Wozniak. He's here at the campus. You can visit him in his dorm. He's built a blue box and wants to know how to use it. And I kind of felt really suspicious. Of course, I didn't bring any of my equipment along. I just came along with totally nothing on me.
What made you so suspicious?
Anybody that wants me to meet with somebody that's built a blue box, I feel very suspicious.
Especially somebody who builds one and doesn't know how to use it.
Yeah, so I found out that his blue boxes were using a square wave instead of a...
Sine wave?
A sine wave. So the square wave, when you send that over an audio line or over a phone line, that tends to get distorted. And so what happens is the equipment in the phone company doesn't recognize it as easy as, let's say, a sine wave, and it automatically gets indigestion.
Yes, and...
And bulks, and if you call too many times, you drop all these different trouble cards, and then you're going to attract a lot of attention.
Ma Bell security is on your butt.
Basically. So we tried about 15, 20 times. We finally able to get the Vatican on the line and hand the phone over to Steve and says, okay, here you go. Talk to the Pope. Ask for the Pope.
I know Steve Wozniak was like the ultimate phone cranker.
Right? He loved to dial a joke.
So I said, Steve, I'm not going to ask for the Pope. You're going to do that. I'm just going to get you to the switchboard of the Vatican. You go from there.
And then what happened?
Well, I got him on the switchboard. He talked to the person on the switchboard, argued, trying to get somebody there that speaks English, and asked to see if the Pope was there. Finally, some English-speaking clerk or person came on the line and says, we're sorry. And he said he was Henry Kissinger, right? And then the guy that came on the line and said, well, look, how can you be Henry Kissinger? He's in Asia right now. He was here just last week. Why would he call again? You know, oops.
did
get a chance to talk.
Did Woz actually use accents, you know, when he called people?
You know, yeah, he sometimes does, yeah.
Oh, you think he's still doing that today?
I don't think he has time to do anything.
Too busy telling these stories, I guess. What's your favorite story with Woz?
My favorite story was when Woz came back on his way to Berkeley from his place in Sunnyvale. And he was in the East Bay. His car broke down. He was at a payphone. He was with Jobs. Mm-hmm. And him and Jobs says, let's see if the blue box works. Jobs said that. But they didn't know how to use it from payphones back then, because back then you couldn't dial direct long-distance 800 numbers from the payphone. You had to have an operator connect you. But when you send a 2600 hertz tone down the line to activate the trunk to use the blue box, that flashes the operator's switchboard and lights start going on.
Yes.
And the operator came on the line, and Woz thought that the operator was on to it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just at about that time, a cop pulls up.
Mm.
And so cop says, what's going on?
Yeah.
And he was trying to hold this box behind his back. And
so he didn't see him in the phone booth.
The cop says, what's that? And he said, oh, that's my music synthesizer. The cop sitting there playing the buttons and stuff. And he says, sounds like it's out of tune. And he says, yeah, because I haven't calibrated it yet.
Good answer.
He came back, the cop handed it back to him and said, a guy by the name of Moog beat you to it.
Ooh.
But this was before blue boxes were known. This was like long before the Esquire article came out. Very few people knew what the blue box could do or even what they looked like.
Yes, yes, that was the fateful article, the Esquire article.
Article was one that just completely shook everybody out of the tree.
Yeah, that was all about the blue box and phone freakers and that whole underground.
Once I saw that article came out, I was going to my computer class at City College.
Yeah.
And I went to my car, went to the 7-Eleven store, picked up the magazine, came back to my car and read it cover to cover. And I said to myself, well, that ends Phone Freak as we know it today.
And there goes your privacy.
Yeah, we know then that was it. No more phone freaking.
That's when you started getting more authorities paying attention to this stuff, right?
Well, I got rid of all my equipment immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, so you turned the page of your life, so to speak. Got into computers instead.
But that didn't help because they still got on to me because they had my voice recordings and stuff like that. So even though I'd already done it, even though I was really careful, it was basically Richard. He basically used his blue box to make some calls, and the phone company got on to him relatively quickly because his blue boxes weren't really accurate, dropped a lot of trouble cards, and they busted him. And now Richard, I gave Richard my phone number. I says, I will give you my phone number on one condition and one condition only, and that is that you remember it and you never give it out to anybody else. You remember it. Yeah, and I asked him every time what my number was. He seemed to have remembered it. I said, fine. And then I find out later, after the cops raided his house, that he had my phone number in his address book under Captain Crunch.
Oh.
It was an open and shut case.
So
on
that
me.
Was it on you and you. And then while in prison, that's when you first started to have back problems, right? When somebody broke your bat?
Oh, that
back?
Was later on. That was in later. Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. Alrighty, well, listen, we've got about 15, 20
yeah,
seconds.
Yeah, let's answer some questions.
We're way past that.
Yeah, we got to say goodbye at this point.
Friend. But tell everybody your website
yeah,
one more time.
What's the website, John? Beyond the Blue Box?
BeyondTheLittleBlueBox.com is the website for the book.
And the GoFundMe campaign?
GoFundMe.com/crunch-medical-fund.
Yeah, just search
and we're
for
also
review.
On Facebook, so you want to search for Beyond the Little Blue Box on Facebook, or also facebook.com/John Captain Crunch Draper.
All right, I'll just go to drfutureshow.com, and we have the links for all this
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, you got all those links, so enjoy visiting them, all right?
Yeah, all right, John. Well, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks,
appreciate
John.
It.
Thanks, John. Stay happy,
luck,
stay free.
Good luck with your help. Stay free.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, thank you for listening. This is the Dr. Future Show. And beautiful Santa Cruz. Thank you, Mrs. Future.
Santa Cruz.
Enjoy the rest of the day, everybody.